Well, for me, both as a writer and as a person, it's something really specific because I'm really into the Enneagram and I'm an Enneagram 3. So I have really struggled with feeling my feelings, both just as a human and while writing, like actually being willing to be emotional on the page. I think for a long time I was embarrassed to do that. It felt like sappy. I was so worried about being sappy or cheesy. I remember just like constantly worrying about that. And ironically, when I started being willing to be emotional when I was writing, like, you know, to actually feel things and put them on the page, that's when my writing got good enough that people wanted to publish it. So professionally, it ended up being a good move for me, but it also has been an important thing for me to learn in life. And it does take bravery.
Hello, hello, Brave Table fam. Welcome to another episode of The Brave Table. I'm your host, Dr. Neetha, and this is your oasis, your destination for being all things just a little bit more brave in your actions, in your life, and in your relationships. Now, today, I have a question for you. If this is your first time tuning in, welcome. Now, have you ever had a dream of writing your words to paper? And maybe even turning some of your mess into your message. Maybe turning some of your most pivotal moments into a book that lasts a lifetime, that leaves a legacy. Well, if you've ever thought about that and more, then this episode is for you. Today on The Brave Table, I have the queen of writing books and helping others author their own books. It is Mary Atkins, and she is a writing coach and founder of the Book Incubator. I, by the way, love that. It's a 12-month program to write, revise, and pitch your novel or memoir. She's the author of the novels When You Read This, which was Best Book of 2019 by Good Housekeeping and Real Simple, Privilege by Today.com, Best Summer Read, and the New York Post Best Book of the Week, and Palm Beach recently named one of New York Post's Best Books of 2021. Her books have been published in 13 countries, and her essays and reporting have appeared in the New York Times, The Atlantic, Slate, and more. As a graduate of Yale Law School and Duke University, she helps aspiring authors finish their fiction books and memoirs with joy and clarity. She's also the host of the First Draft Club podcast. Her new memoir about her own fertility journey is due to come out in early 2024. So without further ado, let's bring on the queen who I know you are going to get so inspired by in this podcast as I did just by having the deepest and most warm conversation with her. Without further ado, let's welcome Mary Atkins to the Brave Table. Life's moments come with their ups and downs, but every experience is an opportunity for growth and connection. Introducing our very popular That Sucked, Now What? Specifically crafted 44-prompt conversation card deck and our 52 card deck of affirmation cards designed to transform your relationships with brave conversations and interactions in your life. Imagine peeling back the layers of everyday conversations to reveal deeper, more meaningful connections. Our conversation cards are your key to unlocking stories, laughter, and understanding among friends, family, or even just going a little bit deeper. And now, with our affirmation cards, start every day with a positive nudge. 52 powerful affirmations to remind you of your boldness, your unapologetic resilience, and your worth. A simple practice that can dramatically shift and change your perspective and uplift your spirit in your day-to-day. Now, these are not just cards. They are gateways to deeper self-growth and self-understanding and brave conversations. Whether it is for yourself or a thoughtful gift, head over to thatsuckednowwhat.com. That is thatsuckednowwhat.com and grab your bundle today. Now back to the show. Mary, welcome to the Brave Table. I'm so excited to dive in. How are you doing?
Me too. Doing great. Great to be here.
Awesome. Well, let's just jump in. How did you get your start with now helping people write their books and being the queen of helping usher out other people's messages and going from being a lawyer into doing what you do now?
So I only made it as a lawyer for 7 months. I was not a lawyer for very long at all. I was actually the shortest tenured lawyer at the law firm where I was working. They were like, you set the record for being a lawyer the least amount of time. But it's because I really had always been dying to be a writer since I was a little girl, since I was in seventh grade. And that wasn't truly clear to me until I had an actual job as an attorney. I loved law school. It was super fun. I loved being a student. I loved like the student lifestyle. But once I was a lawyer, it was like, this is not a fit. And mainly it wasn't a fit because I didn't have time to write, which was what I feel like I'm really born to do and what I love to do most. And now what I love to do is help other people write. So like I have really found my vocation and my kind of calling now. And law just wasn't it. So luckily I figured that out pretty fast. Yeah, 7 months was pretty fast.
That's really fast. I remember when I was in dental school and, you know, I really thought for the longest time, like, I love dentistry. I love it. But going back and looking back, I'm like, did I really love it? Or was I just in it because I loved serving people? And one of my core characteristics is nurturing. Like I am a nurturer. I mean, my horoscope is like Cancerian and we are like mama bears and want to take care of other people. That's always been in my bones. But I feel like the work that I do now and speaking on stages and teaching workshops and being able to, you know, teach in our communities brings me so much more joy. And I didn't even know the amount that I would catapult once I got out. And so I don't know if that resonates with you at all, or, you know, what was that kind of impetus for you to go and chase after your dreams of being a writer?
Yeah, that totally resonates. I think very similarly, I loved the idea of being in law because it seemed like a way to make an impact. And it is a way to make an impact. I mean, the law is the way that we structure our collective lives. So like law really appealed to me as a way to like make a difference, basically. But that, you know, doesn't necessarily translate to like liking the day-to-day of what a particular career is. Mm-hmm. And it turned out that I just didn't love the whole litigation is what I was in. Whereas with writing, like, I love the creative process. Of course, it's hard sometimes. Like, it's not, I mean, you've written a book, like, you know, like, it's not the easiest thing to churn out a book. But, like, even the challenges, I feel like always stretched me in ways that I ended up being grateful for and that taught me something about myself. And it sounds kind of cheesy, but even though I have been a novelist traditionally, I just wrote my first memoir, but my book, my published books so far have all been novels. So I'm a fiction writer. So even though I'm writing fiction, I've always said that I'm like a different person when I finish a book. Like the process of writing the book changes me. Mm-hmm. And that's just like the coolest thing. Like it's the coolest experience and it's part of why I wanted to work with other writers, because it's like, it's so fun to kind of be someone's guide on that transitional journey and to like help them get from the beginning to the end. And by the end, I mean the end of their draft, like finishing a draft of their book, not necessarily even like a finished, polished version, but just the fact that they have now written 70,000 words or 80,000 words or whatever it is, they're like glowing, right? Like they're like, oh my God, I did that. Like we do this thing where I like to have people take a picture of themselves holding it. Like they go print it, they get it bound at FedEx and they take a picture of themselves holding it. And like the confidence that that instills, I feel like it, I don't know, maybe it's equivalent to like climbing Mount Everest or something, like climbing a big mountain, like running a marathon, like doing something that feels like this is a feat that not everyone does.
Totally. And I think that for so many people, I feel like people who are listening to this right now, you know, they're here because some part of them is like, is it possible that I could actually write a book? Is it possible that I can actually, go after my biggest dream. And, you know, maybe I know that, you know, for you and I both, but I'm so curious to hear from you. Do you think everyone has the gusto or the gravitas to actually write a book? And, you know, even I know you've written your memoir, which I want to get into as well. Is there a difference between memoir writers or, you know, novelists versus, you know, nonfiction writers like myself? And how do you delineate between kind of the three?
Yeah, that's such a good question. So I work with people writing long form narratives, so writing novels and memoirs, not like nonfiction, like self-help or nonfiction that's non-memoir, which I know is like what you've written. So I do think they're different in the sense that when I meet writers who are like kind of, they've come to me because there's some kind of story that they have burning in them that they want to tell. That's what it is. It's like it's burning in them. And so I don't know that everyone has that, but I think the people who do have that have it for a reason and they're capable of doing it. Like I also find, and this was really interesting, I didn't realize this till I started working with other writers, because I'm someone, if I have an idea burning in me, I act on it pretty quickly. Like I'm a pretty impulsive person. It's almost, you know, I'm almost on the like far extreme end of like being too quick to act on ideas, like start a million projects. But I've worked with now a number of writers who have had that idea for a book burning in them, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, for years. Like in one case, 30 years, this woman's like, I've been wanting to write this book for 30 years. And she just kept waiting for it to sort of go away, or like maybe she would find time to write it. And by the time we started working together, she was like, I have to write this book because I still think about it and it's been 30 years. Like I need to just write it, which she did, which was awesome. But I think it's that for the people who have that burning sensation, my experience talking to people and working with people is that it doesn't really go away until you write it. So just write it. Like just do it, you know?
And I want to get into the tacticals of this, because I know that even, you know, with my audience, so many people, you know, DM me and they constantly ask, like, I have a desire to, you know, write a children's book. I have a desire to write my story because my mom was diagnosed with, you know, an incurable disease, or I just lost my grandmother and I really want to chronicle her life because she grew up in a part of the world that I just don't want to lose, you know, the rich history. And yeah. I think that even for myself, one of the big reasons and why I wanted you to come on the Brave Table is to really brave some of our deepest desires. And I know that, you know, even after making sense of some of the things that I had to go through early on in my life, like trauma, losses, divorce, and trying to put all the pieces of the puzzle together, I didn't know that it would lead into the career that I'm in now. And yeah. I feel like a lot of our audience is kind of like, well, I'm in this gap. I'm in this bridge time where I'm transitioning, or I'm curious to transition from one career, and I don't know what the next thing could look like, but I have this like burning desire to put my content out in a book. I know that for me, if I had somebody like you in my field about, you know, I don't know, 8-9 years ago before I started my journey even, because I sold my practice 7 years ago now. And the idea that a book could be possible was so far-fetched, but I started doing it anyway. And if I had a book coach like you who could pave the path to make it so much more seamless and to actually be there every step of the way, fully mind blown. And so my question for you is, what is it like to actually, you know, work with somebody like you? Do you work with everyone? And what if people are like, I have this idea for a book, but I just don't know what it is. Do you still recommend them actually write a book, or that they just journal? What's your take on the different ways people can kind of start making moose tracks on their journey?
Yeah, such a good question. So the way that I work with people is to first have them apply. I mean, it's a short application, and apply is almost, It's not the wrong word. It's the right word, but it's not the right word in the sense that like you're proving something. Like you're not trying to prove anything. It's basically just like, tell me who you are and like, what's this idea? What's the idea you have that's burning? And let's just start there, because some people do start at a place of like, you know, I want to be an author, but I have like 5 ideas and I don't know which way to go. And then other people are like, I want to write about this experience that happened to me, but like, is this a book? I don't know if this is a book, or is this an essay, or is it a something else? And then some people say like, they just want validation that their idea is rich enough to constitute a book, or they just want to talk it out to like flesh it out so that it is rich enough to constitute a book. But basically, like pretty much everybody starts at that place. I mean, I do end up working with some people who have already have a draft and they're revising, and like those people are, they're good, right? Like they're like, I need to make this as good as possible. And that's really fun too, but they're coming in at a very different place. I very much relate to people who are, they think, you know, I have this idea. And again, whether it's to write about your own life and it's nonfiction, or it's a fantasy, you know, it's a complete fantasy story that you dreamt when you were 12 and like you've always wanted to write it as a novel, like whether it's either of those or anywhere in between, I very much relate to people needing someone to give them permission to do it. Because mm-hmm. I didn't do it until someone gave me permission. Like looking back, like even after I quit my job as a lawyer and I started writing, I didn't think I was capable of writing fiction. I thought, well, because I had taken a creative class in college that totally gutted me and I made B minuses in it. And I thought, oh, I guess I'm bad at fiction. So I should just stick with essays. I should just write essays because people tell me I do that well. And I ended up sharing this novel idea I had with a literary agent who in conversation asked me if I had a novel. And I was like, well, I don't have a novel, but I do have an idea. And he's like, that's a really good idea. You should write it and send it to me. And that was my permission slip to start writing fiction. I don't know that I even would have written fiction if someone hadn't basically validated my idea and said, do it. You can go do it, even though you don't have an MFA in creative writing, even though the only creative writing fiction class you ever took, you made B minuses in. Like, he's like, you can still do it. Like, because of that conversation, essentially. And listen, I know, understand, like, there are many routes to the same ends. Like, it could have happened another way and maybe very well would have. But the way that my life ended up playing out is that because of that conversation where someone gave me permission, it became my career, my actual career. And it turned out I could do it. Like I could actually become a professional novelist, even though I only took one fiction creative writing class and got B minuses in it, because that was just one person in one class. And she wasn't like the professor of that class didn't represent all of publishing and all of readers.
And do you think that that kind of has informed like your newest memoir? And tell us a little bit, you know, about how that journey has been to create that. And is the memoir, does that mean that some of it is fiction? Does it mean that all of it is fiction? Tell us a little bit about kind of the differences.
Yeah. So with memoir, the standard definition of memoir would be that it's true. So you're allowed to anonymize things, to protect certain people, to draw boundaries in your life around certain events. But whenever you do that, whenever you kind of make composites or fictionalize certain things, there's an expectation that you will tell the reader that at the front. So like in most memoirs, there will be a page in the front that says something like I'm thinking of, there's a memoir by Lori Gottlieb, who is a therapist, and she wrote a memoir called Maybe You Should Talk to Someone about being a therapist. It's so good. Have you read it?
No, but I've heard of it. Yeah.
It's really good. But she has this caveat at the beginning, this disclaimer that's like, listen, I'm a therapist and there's confidentiality. So all of the people in this memoir are composites of real people, because they can't be real people, because I can't do that professionally. But it's still technically, it's still a memoir, because the events from her life in it are true. She's presenting them as true. She's using her real name. And then she tells the reader what's not true. So that's really what distinguishes a memoir from a novel, in which like in a novel, the expectation is it's just literally the opposite. It's like we're going to assume everything in here is fictionalized, even if some of it isn't, you know, even if some of it is from your real life. So for me, the memoir was a big shift in the sense that, like, I had gone from writing fiction, even with maybe some autobiographical elements, to writing about my own life, which in this case was my infertility journey. I'd never felt compelled to write a memoir until I couldn't get pregnant. And after going through that experience, it was like, oh, I think I have a story worth telling now that I think will take me a whole book, like, to really unpack that whole journey. So yeah, it was a really different writing experience in some ways. In some ways it was similar, but it was profound. It was cathartic in a way that writing novels had never been, which probably is no surprise.
Wow. And how would you kind of, in the landscape of how people consume books, I've heard that book coaches kind of share, keep it smaller, keep it shorter for the attention span of people. Mm. What is your take on that? And how did that kind of inform the way you wrote your upcoming memoir?
Yeah, I never have my writers think about the reader at all, which is interesting because, like, that is a very specific approach, I realize, which is like, we're not thinking about how it's going to be perceived or how it's going to be read. It's much more about being immersed in the experience of whatever the story is and just trying to channel that and then letting that be whatever it is, whether that's short or long or funny or serious. I mean, it's interesting because I very much believe this is not my idea. This is Elizabeth Gilbert's idea that she shares in her book, Big Magic. But she talks about creativity as being this, like, sovereign force of its own. And they're just these ideas floating around in the ether, like, looking for human partners to bring them to life. And yeah. I really feel like that's true. And so sometimes people will, they'll, like, start writing their book and they're like, it's coming out funny and I don't want to write funny. And I'm like, just lean into the funny. This idea maybe wants to be funny, you know? Or, like, in my own experience, I started writing one of my novels and it's like, I did not want there to be romance in it. It was like, I just had this, like, resistance to there being romance. I think because I was like, I'm not going to be boxed in as a woman author who writes romance. I want to be taken seriously as, like, a writer of literature. And when I put, once we put romance in there, it's women's fiction and people are going to think it's superficial. I mean, it was like, I had all this internalized misogyny, basically. But the story kept, this romance kept, like, kept coming at me. And finally, when I wrote it into the draft, my literary agent was like, yes, finally, like, you've done it. This is the story. And then that ended up being the book, was like, I mean, it was more than just romance, but, like, a romance is a major part of the plot. So yeah, I think my approach to book coaching is very much like, it's a little mystical. Like, it's very much like, be open to whatever this idea is trying to tell you and where it's trying to take you, and just let that happen. And that might end up being way longer or way shorter or in a different style than you expected. But, like, let's just go there and see. And you can always change it later on revision. You know, this is just like always just a first draft.
Hey, love, want to go deeper and behind the scenes with our mini trainings with some of our guests on the Brave Table? Then become an insider and get the inside scoop. It's absolutely free and you'll unlock private mini trainings that will help you be even more brave in your relationships as we go deeper in certain areas of your life. So become an insider today for free at neethabhushan.com/insiders. That's INSIDERS. And learn from the Vice documentary Shaft on pleasure, Dr. Kate Northrup on money blocks, Karen Rockland on speaking your truth, and Dr. Nisha Khanna on women's health, and so, so much more. And guess what? It's all free when you go to Neetha, that's N-E-E-T-A, Bhushan, BHUSHAN.com/insiders. Grab your inside scoop today. And now back to the show. Well, and I love that you're giving people the permission to play.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of times we have this goal or this direction and it has to go a certain way. Yet when we are allowed to play like children on a playground or just, you know,
yeah.
For me, it's kind of that creative expression, you know, to paint and to kind of let the expectations go. And when we let the expectations go, we're able to create more. We're able to, you know, allow ourselves to dabble, and that dabbling can lead into something more. It's kind of like building that creative muscle. And so how do you teach, or what tips can you give to our audience on if they are curious to build that creative muscle? What would you suggest maybe their first few steps could be after today?
Okay, so one thing I always encourage the writers I work with just to experiment with, because it really worked for me on my second novel. I was writing it with a newborn at home. I had just had my son. So I was...
Congratulations.
For the first time, thank you. It was an amazing period of life, but it was also really hard to write. Like for the first time, I found the computer really daunting and the typewritten word daunting. And so I started handwriting. And by handwriting, just in a notebook, I ended up being able to write what became my entire second novel. And then that it had worked so well, I handwrote my third novel. So what I really like to do to encourage that, exactly what you were saying, to encourage that playfulness, because if it's playful, we come back and do it. Like we're not going to come back and do it if we don't like it, right? Like, so if it's playful, it's like it keeps us coming back, and that's how it gets done. I like to encourage people to like change up the medium from what you normally do at work that has now become associated with work to you, even if you like work, but still work. Because writing doesn't need to be typed. It doesn't need to be on a computer, right? Like I said, I handwrite now because it works so well for me after I have my son. So like I worked with someone who dictated her entire novel into her iPhone. Like go on walks, like just start talking out stories. Like someone else likes to write on the notes app of their iPhone. Get a cool old typewriter at a yard sale. Like, I mean, whatever it is that just sounds fun. It can be tactile. It can be messy. Like another writer, Rufy Thorpe, who now teaches with me, she's a novelist as well. She collages before she writes a novel. She just makes like a massive collage out of magazine clippings and all sorts of other things like to like get into the spirit of her novel. And I love that because that's exactly, I feel like what we're talking about. It's playful and crafty and the kind of thing that adults don't normally do, you know, which I think is part of what makes it so valuable.
Yeah. And I wanted to also add, as you were sharing, because there is definitely a brain component for when we are, you know, activating parts of our brain that we're usually so normalized to basically the go, go, go. And the, you know, when we are in a beta brain state, our beta brain state is like, okay, solve the problems. Let's keep going. Let's do what we're normally doing. And when we're activating different parts of our brain, kind of like what you said, write it down. Because I know for me, for a little bit, writing down activated a different part of my brain because that's not my go-to. And yes, actually, you know, creates new neural pathways in our brain. It activates our creative centers in our brain. And it allows us to be in more of that alpha state, in the calm state, in the creativity state. And even to your point about taking walks, my fourth book that I wrote, That Sucked Now What, I was actually taking walks. And funny enough that like my daughter was born around the same time when I was writing this book. So we share that commonality. Mm-hmm. But I would walk while I would be dictating into a phone. And that was activating my creative centers in such a way because I couldn't sit, you know, when I was with my daughter. I like just needed to walk and like get it out. And it was almost cathartic and therapeutic. But I've obviously studies show, and we know this just from brain health, but to be able to activate the parts of our brain that has been dormant, which is why sometimes we'll find pleasure in doing certain things. And like you said, you want it to be fun. You're coaching your clients to make it fun and pleasurable because that's where we activate more of that dopamine. And the dopamine gets us motivated to write even more and to do it even more. Yeah. And so then we create a habit around it. So I love this idea of make it fun, make it joyous. You know, get an old typewriter if you can and have the ability to, you know, if it's calling you to be funny, like add that in. If it's calling you to be more, you know, romantic, allow it to express. And I think that's the beauty of, you know, just allowing and surrendering. And
yeah.
So before we get into our, you know, igniting round though, I did have a couple of questions for you just around even titling. And so what is the name of your memoir so we can all lead our audience to get a copy? Because by the time this airs, it'll be at the time that your book is launching. So we would definitely want to support you. And how was that experience? Because I don't know, for myself, titling, especially my last book, probably took the longest journey. It took about 10 months.
Really? That's so interesting because that's such a good title, like great title. But so that it took a long time to get there, like brainstorming lots of different ones.
Yes. And I think also because I was working with a publisher, had their own ideas of what they desired for me as an author that fit a certain checkbox for them. And I think that also I was evolving my brand to not be in a certain way that maybe the publishers, when I was selling the book a year and a half before, had of me. And so interestingly, they peg you in a hole. And so they're like, no, she would never say something like, that sucked. Now what? And so she would say something like, this is the Phoenix framework. Literally, that's what it was supposed to be called.
No, so much worse. So much worse.
I mean, I love the Phoenix and the journey, and that's kind of what I talked about in many ways, but I rewrote everything. But I'm curious to you, do you have a process for thinking of titles? Because I know that's the biggest thing for any book, right? We don't judge a book by its cover. However, if the title is catchy or it's not, just like how you had that experience when I shared with you what it originally was going to be called, do you think it could make or break a book?
I think it totally can. And along the same lines, like my title for the memoir is currently in flux for this exact reason. Because it's about my infertility journey, but it's ultimately uplifting. It's about how like it helps me rediscover why I want to be alive and like redefine my identity. So it's really hard to find a title that captures the spirit of that, like that captures the whole, like, look, this goes to a dark place, but it ends in like a really bright place. So this isn't just going to be a downer. So that's what we're working on now. I mean, right now the working title is The Ache of Wonder, but I don't know if it's going to stay that way because it has the word ache in it, even though it also has the word wonder in it. I do like the title. I did come up with that myself, but I do see why it might be a little too heavy for what's actually in the book. But titles have always been, that's not quite true. So two of my books, we had a lot of back and forth with title, like you. It was just like, by we, I mean me, my publisher, my literary agent, like everybody involved in the publishing process had opinions. And then only, but one of my books, it's so funny that like it came to me, my second novel is called Privilege. And it's about a sexual assault on a college campus told from the perspectives of three women, the victim, the girlfriend of the guy who assaulted her, and his student advocate. So like three women telling the same story. And when I thought of the idea for this novel, I thought of the title Privilege. And it was Privilege was the title the whole time I was writing it. It was the title when I was pitching it. And no one ever questioned if it was the title.
I mean, like, it's so direct and it's perfect and it's brilliant.
Right? Like it's just, I think it's a good title because it's just like Privilege is a good title. Like I was lucky it was not taken yet, actually, for that reason. Yeah, that's the only one where we didn't have like a bunch of emails back and forth going, how about this? How about this? How about this?
And I think, you know, in just to kind of round out this conversation around titling, you know, I think for anybody who is putting anything out there, you know, the idea that I even heard back from different publishers that did not, when my working title was The Phoenix Framework, that did not pick up my book because I was rejected by three rounds of publishers, which is about 27 publishers, actually. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons why was when I got the feedback, they said that, you know, it has to be counterintuitive. And just kind of how you had the ache and wonder, you know, the opposing, because that is intriguing for a reader. That's intriguing for anybody. And so for anyone that, and I'll just pass this information along, and I wish I had that beforehand, they do like counterintuitive, you know, titles, because there is that intrigue, there is that mystery. There's a reason why, you know, stand-up comedians do so well is because they have the contrast. You know, it's not fully in your face. You know, it's almost the contradiction that gives it this certain uniqueness. And readers are kind of like, ooh, I want to know more about that. And I feel like novelists do this really well, especially in how, you know, the book art is created.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I think in general, fiction, like novelists do that more than is done with nonfiction. And by the way, I don't think your old title was bad. I just think your actual title's better.
Thanks, Mary.
Just to be clear. Thanks.
Thank you. Thank you for being my book coach. So let's get into it. And before we actually get into our final round, where can everybody get a hold of you? And if they are looking to write their dream book and maybe even bounce some ideas off of you, tell us kind of the ways that we can actually work with you.
Yeah. So the program I run, I only coach writers through one program called the Book Incubator. And that's really easy. They just go to thebookincubator.com. And then if they want to check out my books, if they're like interested in looking at those or anything like that, including my upcoming memoir, that will all just be on my personal website, which is maryadkinswriter.com. Writer, like, you know, writing naturally, not riding a horse.
Perfect. Perfect. I'm making sure that all of this is actually going to be in the show notes. And great. Now, so as we get into our igniting round, what does it mean to be brave?
Well, for me, both as a writer and as a person, that has meant it's something really specific, because I'm really into the Enneagram and I'm an Enneagram 3. So I have really struggled with feeling my feelings, both just as a human and while writing, like actually being willing to be emotional on the page. I think for a long time I was embarrassed to do that. It felt like sappy. I was so worried about being sappy or cheesy. I remember just like constantly worrying about that. And ironically, when I started being willing to be emotional when I was writing, like, you know, to actually feel things and put them on the page, that's when my writing got good enough that people wanted to publish it. So professionally, it ended up being a good move for me, but it also has been an important thing for me to learn in life. And it does take bravery. It takes, like, to cry in front of my husband takes bravery for me, which is maybe a little bit embarrassing to admit, because, like, I don't know, it just seems like, what? You can't cry in front of your spouse? But like, no, I've really had to like learn to let myself do that.
Oh, I love that. Thank you for sharing that. And I think that this brings me to my next question then. How old is your son, and what advice or just words of wisdom do you have for him now that you're kind of on the other side of your infertility journey?
He's 5. So he's a very little guy. And I think, I mean, when he was born, it was really interesting, because I realized soon after he was born, like literally in the days after he was born, it hit me that the thing I wanted most for him in all of life was joy. And I don't know, I guess I just didn't expect that. Like, I didn't expect that to be the thing I wanted for him most, like way more than success or romantic love or really anything. It was like, I just want him to have joy. And yeah, it was also, I think, a good realization, because I immediately did the reflection of like, if I want that most for him, like, what about me? Like, do I have joy in my life? And I did, but it was like, how can I have more of it? Like, if that's what I want most for him, maybe it should also be what I want most for me. So I think my advice for him is that, like, I want him to seek out joyful experiences. And that that's okay to do, you know, like it's not selfish. It's not, I mean, as long as those joyful experiences aren't at someone else's expense, like robbing a store or something. Like I want him to feel permission to do that.
And one word that describes the season of life.
Transitional. Yeah. My family just, we moved to Texas from Nashville, Tennessee to be closer to family. And we are transitioning out of, you know, our secondary infertility journey happened after I had my son. So like we're now transitioning into being really at home and at peace, like being a family of three instead of a bigger family, which is what we had always thought we would be. So it's kind of like a new normal. And yeah, so I think transitional.
Wow. Thank you so much, Mary, for just your wisdom, your spark, your compassion for writers and your passion for helping other authors get their messages on the pages and help them really ignite their very, very first book, and for being here to brave it all.
No, it was such a pleasure. Thanks for having me and talking.
Until next time on the Brave Table. All right, welcome to the other side. Wow, if you are just inspired to write your novel, your memoir, your book, go ahead and head to thebookincubator.com. You can also find Mary at Mary Atkins, that is M-A-R-Y-A-D-K-I-N-S, writer.com. You can also follow Mary at Mary Atkins on IG and grab her books. They are also linked below in the show notes. And if you've loved this episode, if you thought this sparked your interest in your writing journey, I would love for you to listen to the episode on Trisha Brooke, How to Get Your Message Out on Stage. And that is linked in the show notes. Also episode with Megan Stevenson, how to actually write and publish your book and what the differences are between self-publishing and publishing with a publishing company. And lastly, episode 107, Sisterhood, Deepening Your Passions and Braving Your Voice with author Pooja Shah. Now, if you loved this and have not yet written a review, we would love, love, love for you to write a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And when you actually share your review, go ahead and screenshot it and send it to support@globalgrit.co. That is support@globalgrit.co. And we will send you a free gift. Thank you so much for being here. Appreciate you so, so much. And as always, don't forget to be just a little bit more brave.